today's episode with Jeff Stewart is a little bit heavier than my normal podcast episode. Jeff is a licensed marriage and family counselor, and his specialty is in building trust in the marriage relationship. Today, we talk about not only building trust, which is so important in any marriage, but we talk about building trust after big betrayals, which sometimes include infidelity or sexual addiction or things of that nature. I was surprised once I started talking about marriage at the number of people who reached out to me through messages or through email and had stories about spouses being unfaithful either to them or to the marriage in some way. And so I knew I needed to address this topic. And I love Jeff's take on it. And I love how hopeful he is in that he's had a lot of success with couples who have experienced these types of betrayals and continued in the marriage. So not only are we going to discuss building trust after betrayal, but he also answers my signature question of how would you advise all the couples in the world to build an unshakable trust? And his answer is brilliant. I hope you enjoy this episode with my friend Jeff Stewart. Hello and welcome to On the Brighter Side. I'm your host, Monica Tanner, and I'm super excited about my guest today. His name is Jeff Stewart, and he is a licensed marriage and family therapist here to talk to us about some of the betrayal trauma that happens in marriage and how to build the trust back. This is a super important topic that I think affects more marriages than we even know, and I'm so grateful for his time today. Hi, Jeff. How are you doing?
Hi there, Monica. Thanks for having me.
Why don't you start by telling us just a little bit about yourself and your family?
Well, I've been married for 23 years and we have four kids, 20 to 10 years old. So we've got a whole range of them. And I have a degree in marriage and family therapy from Auburn University, and I've been practicing for over 20 years and absolutely love being a therapist, love being a husband and a dad. And, you know, it's one of those cool things where I actually get to do something that I love, you know, that aligns with my values and my purpose. And I just feel really fortunate every day I get to wake up and talk about relationships and help people and go home and try and practice what I preach, you know, those kinds of things. So
that is awesome. They say love what you do and you'll never work a day in your life. So
yep, that's what it feels like.
Oh, that's great. So tell us a little bit about your credentials and how you got into this line of work.
Well, I originally studied journalism as an undergraduate. I was going to be a journalist, but I kept finding myself being drawn to relationships. And I think journalists are inherently interested in people and stories. And my wife and I, when we first got married, we moved next door to a retired human development family studies professor. And we would go to dinner at their house and talk about marriage and families. And I just never wanted to leave. I just thought, this is the most fascinating stuff I've ever heard. And I'd been married about 2 weeks at that point. And so I just changed gears and finished my degree in journalism, but I went on to do a master's in marriage and family therapy with his blessing, and just really started to resonate deeply when we started talking about this stuff with my own experiences living in a family. I'm a family of six kids. My parents have been married for 40 plus years, almost 50 years. They have a good marriage. They work hard at it. I know my own mistakes with my siblings and my own marriage. I just was very in tune. Even being married a couple of weeks, I had already blown trust with my wife a few times. I just recognized that there were answers and there was good information out there that could alleviate a lot of the problems that just come up by being human and being in close relationships with people and depending on people. So I just resonated with it so deeply on a personal level. And I also just had an interest in people and stories and connections and how people work. And it all came together and it's been quite a journey. So that's how I found myself here. And then specifically working with betrayal, the first part of my career, I worked with children, but I always found myself wanting to get my hands on their parents. And I just felt like the kids would do better if the mom and dad, if the parents were doing better. And then that, of course, when you start working with couples in therapy, couples don't generally come in and pay for therapy when they just want a little bit of marriage enrichment. Usually they're like dead on arrival, right? It's like ER, ICU level stuff. And that usually involves deep betrayals. And so I knew I had to get good at working with these things. And so that's when I started to really specialize in working with affairs, sexual addiction, pornography addiction, but all the betrayal trauma and sexual injuries in a marriage. Sexual betrayals hurt the worst, absolutely. And so that's where I found myself. And I just felt like like I had a lot to offer these couples.
Yeah. So what do you find are some of the most common forms of betrayal? And then what are some of the most common challenges that the couples that come to you are facing?
Well, yeah, we betray our spouses in small ways all the time. You know, this morning I was leaving the house and my wife felt like I wasn't, she calls it fading. She goes, Jeff, you'll just kind of fade into something else. Like you'll just pick up your phone or you'll just kind of change the subject. And where there's not really a clear transition, I feel like you maybe like aren't paying attention, which is a struggle for me, right? So I'm like, okay, I have to step back, repair that, have an honest conversation about what I did. And so those betrayals, those happen all the time. And hopefully you're on top of them, you're repairing them, you're accountable, and you're trying to just do maintenance kind of stuff for those betrayals. And then there's betrayals of the promise, right? The marriage commitment, the agreement, whether that's monogamy or other kinds of things like you'll have my back, I can count on you to be there for me, you'll stick up for me. We make these agreements. Some of them are explicit, some are implicit when we get married to somebody. And sometimes you learn after you break them about the implicit ones, but certainly the explicit ones, like for most couples would be fidelity, sexual fidelity for the majority of couples. That one, when that one gets broken, you know, the repair process is not really unlike the repair process I'm doing, you know, in the morning with my wife when I maybe fade off a little bit, but it's just deeper and it's a lot more extended than something that could be repaired on the spot. But there's some of the principles are very similar. It's just that I think a lot of people get impatient or overwhelmed and give up too early trying to repair trust.
So what are some of the warning signs or things to look for that might point to the fact that our spouse might be participating in some sort of sexual betrayal or more serious betrayal?
One of the biggest measures is the connection, believe it or not. And a lot of partners feel, the betrayed partner can oftentimes feel a sense that something's off. And they'll usually blame circumstances, they'll blame themselves. But anytime that there's a secret in a relationship, and there's always going to be secrets around sexual betrayal, anytime there's a secret, there's a wall that has to go up to maintain the secret. Now, the person who's unfaithful obviously believes at some level that they're not affecting the relationship or that they can somehow hide it and function normally. But there's an energy change. There's something that's off. And I can't think of any case where somebody's been sexually betrayed or had that kind of thing where they didn't, when they look back on it later on, where they're like, you know, I ignored those signs or I told myself it was something else. I blamed it on myself. But there was a change there. And so it's not to say that every time your partner is off or there's an energy change or they're disconnected that they're cheating, but it is important to start to not let those things go, is my point. And it's funny, like you're not always you'd think, well, you'd notice it in the bedroom or you'd notice it, you know, because they're not where they're supposed to be. I've had people that have carried on years-long affairs that looked and acted like everything was normal, but there was a distance in the marriage. There was a disconnect that they kind of had to maintain, because in order to live a double life, you do have, Brene Brown says, you can't selectively numb emotion. It's going to show up everywhere. And really emotionally tuned in couples will pick up on that a lot faster. So a lot of the times when there's a big emotional gap in the relationship, it's easier to hide infidelity for longer. Now, that's not blaming the partner that's been betrayed. It's not their fault for the affair, but the couple does have to look at the emotional gaps in their relationship, post-affair recovery, absolutely.
For sure. Okay, so here's the question probably on everyone's mind, but is there anything that you can do to prevent something like this from happening or catch it really quickly so that it doesn't go too far?
Oh, I know, right? Wouldn't it be nice if there was early detection, like an earthquake or something?
Yeah.
I do think that obviously you can't control another person. So it does involve accepting the fact that somebody else is going to have a choice in this matter. And so that's why it's not your fault if you get cheated on. You aren't the one creating that. And so it's important that, you know, because the truth is if you could early detect it and stop it, then you would be responsible for it. And so recognize that because you can't stop it, you'll never be responsible for it. Even if you're the worst partner in the world and you're the hardest person to be married to, your partner that betrays you still has lots of other options they can exercise. I mean, they can divorce you, right? They can do all kinds of stuff besides cheat on it. So recognize that whatever they do is not your fault. Now, in terms of early detection, I want to go back to my earlier answer, which is I think that there's a lot of conversations couples need to have about affairs prior to something like this happening. My wife and I've had plenty of these conversations around boundaries, what we do with the opposite sex. You know, I don't go to lunch with women, coworkers, just as a rule. I just have some boundaries around that. If there's an exception to that, out. We talk about it and we're very open about it. I think it's important for couples to be honest about their own feelings of disconnection, times where maybe they feel drawn to another person. I think there's this belief out there that if we're married and we feel attracted to somebody else, that something's wrong with us, and that's not true. Human chemistry and attractiveness and all that stuff doesn't just magically disappear when you get married. And so I think Shirley Glass talks a lot about in her famous book, Not Just Friends, she talks about having these open conversations about owning your own attraction. I remember when I was in graduate school, I had been a therapist maybe a month, I don't know. And I had a professor that noticed I was a little bit too friendly with one of my female clients who was a single mom, very vulnerable. And he called me on it and he says, hey, you know, you feeling kind of some energy there? And I was so embarrassed and ashamed to admit that I was starting to feel a little bit of attraction there. And he said, that's very normal. When you're in therapy, people are very vulnerable and they respond to you really well. And you're lonely. You never see your family. So he really kind of supervised me through that. And I went home and talked to my wife about it. And over the 23 years of our marriage, we both have been open at times where we recognize vulnerabilities and times where there's been emotional gaps or when there's been loneliness and those things. So I feel like couples that are willing to be honest and open about the fact that they're human, that they're having normal feelings, loneliness, even attraction, all these kinds of things, and catch that stuff way upstream, that kind of stuff is going to be really preventative and realistic about preventing affairs if you're totally honest and transparent with your partner about those kinds of things. And it creates a ton of safety.
Yeah, I think that's huge. We're going to talk about trust building, I'm sure, later, but I think it's huge to be able to be so honest with your spouse about what you're feeling and what your desires are and the thing that you think without fear of the blowback of that. Like, oh, she's going to go tell her mom that I'm attracted to the lady at the gym or whatever, right? So being able to have that really safe space where you're not going to be judged harshly or that trust won't be broken if you talk to your spouse about things like that you're thinking. I know that's been huge in our marriage, that we're able to talk about some of the innermost feelings and thoughts. And, you know, I'm never worried that he's going to betray my trust. And the same with him. He's told me multiple times, I'm so grateful that I can talk to you about these things, because otherwise it would just go haywire, right?
Absolutely. Well, exactly. And it, you know, if you're married to somebody who, let's say, like their dad or their mom cheated on, you know, and they come into the marriage with that sensitivity, conversation like this is probably going to be really tough and reactive. And that's just good for you to take personal responsibility for your own sensitivities and your own wounds and your own fears around this. But the truth is that in affairs, part of what makes affairs so attractive to a lot of people is the fact that they can talk about anything openly. Mm-hmm. That sort of secret relationship is usually, it's so they feel so free to be themselves and talk openly and share their feelings, men and women. And you just want to have that in your own marriage. You want to have that kind of freedom to just say, this is what's going on for me. And I'll tell you, if your partner, if you're listening to this and you're like, oh, I could never have my partner be that honest with me. But I want to tell you, if your partner comes to you and opens up about a vulnerability, they're coming to you because they don't want to act on it. They're coming to you. It's a safeguard. That's to me is a gift to the relationship. And so to react in a way like they've just betrayed the marriage and done something so awful, I think is going to make the relationship way more unstable. So if you need support to handle your partner's honesty and their struggle and where they're at, then get yourself some support, because you probably have some pre-existing wounds or trails in your own history that make that really scary for you. But the gold standard should be to be able to talk about anything as a couple, even if it's simple.
Yeah, I totally hear what you're saying. I mean, full disclosure, I do have that in my past, and I had to tell my husband, my biggest fear literally on the earth is that you're going to be unfaithful to me, because I've seen it, it's happened, and it took years and years of him having to say, I'm not going anywhere. I'm right here. I'm not going anywhere. He had to be careful with my disclosure, with my feelings about having to say, this is my biggest fear. And so I do get triggered by things like this. And for him to treat that so kindly and just be like, I'm not going anywhere, and to repeat that over and over and over again until I felt comfortable, that now we can just share anything and I'm not afraid of it anymore, because he's reinforced it so much that, hey, if I'm thinking about leaving, I'm going to tell you before. Like, you know, you don't have to be afraid of that. I'm not going anywhere.
Right. And it's not just talk. His actions back it up.
Exactly.
And it's been consistent. So you're not having to manage a set of behavior and a set of words that don't even line up. So you're very fortunate that your fears were handled lovingly and respectfully, and that they're also backed up with action, because otherwise you'd have every reason in the world to basically see, yep, that's what happens in marriages. People aren't faithful. That's true. I'm grateful that you've had a corrective experience with that.
Yeah. I mean, I've had a great marriage, which is why I'm so drawn to help others with their marriage, because I know I went from this idea of marriage that was very shaky to it can be really amazing, but right. you know, it definitely takes a lot of work. So what can we do if we find out that our spouse has been hiding something? What are the first steps we should take if we recognize that there's been some sort of a betrayal and our spouse is truly hiding something from us?
And you're talking about hiding any kind of a secret that would be a deal breaker for the relationship, something that'd be really big like that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, a couple things. One is to speak it out loud and absolutely talk with them about it directly. Some people might come from a family system that's really avoidant, or they'll just go kind of fly right into forgiveness or be afraid just to talk about it because it'll be uncomfortable. So I definitely think that like bringing it to your partner and having the courage to talk openly about it is first step. But also, and this one is a little bit controversial, so we can talk about it for a minute, but I'm a big fan and again, borrowing another Shirley Glass term, is making sure that you've always got a couple friends of the marriage that you can talk to. Now, there's kind of some old school advice out there, you know, you don't talk to other people about your marriage or your problems or whatever. I think that that advice should be footnoted, qualified with some different exceptions. One of those being, you should be able to talk with a therapist or a counselor or even the clergy if they're safe and they've got, and those places are usually bound by rules of confidentiality and security. So you need to have the chance to talk through it. And you might even do that before you talk to your spouse about what you've discovered, to slow it down, to understand your own reactions, to decide what you want to do. I don't recommend calling your mom or, you know, somebody that's going to just take your side automatically, because those people don't forgive or move on as quickly as you might, because they're very territorial and protective, especially when something like this might go down, especially if it's a massive betrayal. You know, there might be close friends or people that are very mature, have good boundaries, wisdom, experience, and that are, again, friends of the marriage that aren't going to just automatically take sides and recognize that they're rooting for the marriage. You need that, because it's not as simple as like, oh, hey, that's a dumb friend, like in middle school. We'll just dump them. You know, it's complicated when you're married and even have kids. It's just not as simple as one strike and you're out. Most people work through major betrayals. Most people stay married. I think 70-80% is the statistic I'm familiar with that actually recover from infidelity. I mean, it's very high. Most people do it. So you want to find people that are going to stay with the marriage as you work through this and not split you.
Yeah, I love that. So you use emotionally focused therapy to work through situations like that. Can you talk about how that interacts with working with a couple to overcome this type of betrayal?
Yeah, emotionally focused therapy developed by Sue Johnston is really, in my belief, the best researched and one of the most effective forms of couples therapy. The other famous one is John Gottman's approach. And I use both of those. I think they're fabulous approaches to helping couples. So many resources, the models are just really solid. But the long and the short of it is this, that no marriage therapy proper, you know, having two people in the room working through the marriage issues is going to work if there's active betrayals going on. So for example, if there's an active affair going on, or an active addiction, or active abuse, or even active abandonment, they call them the four A's. If any of those are going on actively when the couple is meeting with me, we're not going to do couples therapy, because that puts the vulnerable betrayed person in a major one down position, puts them in many cases at a risk for safety issues, physical or emotional, and even sexual issues. And so the first step for couples that are dealing with major betrayals is containment and accountability. So you don't do emotionally focused therapy or other kinds of therapy techniques or couples therapy stuff, because it assumes, those kinds of approaches assume a level playing field where you got two people that are bringing in issues and there's two sides to the story and you're working through their different viewpoints. When there's a major betrayal like this, the first thing is safety. You've got to establish some boundaries and some containment. And so you've got to stop the affair and make sure that there's real accountability and a full disclosure, or the addiction, that there's recovery and sobriety going on, if the abuse has stopped and any legal or safety issues are dealt with right away. So those are the big betrayals that usually blow marriages apart right away. Other kinds of betrayals, financial secrets, other kinds of things like that, there's all kinds of different ways you can hurt your partner. When you're working with a couple in emotionally focused therapy, you're really helping the person who committed the injury, who committed the betrayal, to really start to hear and listen to and understand the impact that they've had on their partner. And you're working, once there's been some safety and some established boundaries and some containment, entertainment, the injured partner can start to really share and open up what this has been like for them. And they can start to see the impact, the unfaithful person can start to see the impact that they're having on this person, on the marriage. And so a lot of the work early on is really feels kind of one-sided, because a lot of it's about accountability and restoring some sort of a baseline. I often compare it to when there's a major betrayal, like a deal breaker betrayal like that, it's like blowing a crater in the marriage. And you spend the first part of marriage therapy working on filling the crater to get it back to level ground at a minimum. And then you can start talking about both sides of the story and how people feel and stuff like that. But that initial filling up that hole is the responsibility of the person that betrayed the relationship. I'm not going to ask them how they feel while their partner's down in the hole, scared to death. You know, they put them in this giant hole and they're like, tell us how you feel up on the ground. You know, the person who betrayed and the injured person yelling down in the hole, how do you feel down there? Are you scared? You know, it just doesn't make any sense when there's such a different level of emotional safety. The person that betrayed is in a much more emotionally safe place because they're the one that had the secret. They're the one that had the information. They're the one that was really in control, manipulating all the variables with secrecy and all those things. So we want to help raise the floor up for the betrayed person so that they feel stable enough to then start sharing and talking almost more equally. And that process for most people, just in my experience, I don't have any personal research on this, but just over 20 years watching couples do this work, you know, it's a good 1 year or so before there's enough trust to really do some deep, deep marriage work. The first 6 months to a year is really focused on creating safety and establishing, depending on how deep the betrayal is. It's a lot of work. And so if you go see a marriage counselor and you're starting to talk about communication strategies in like the second session, and there's been a major, major betrayal, that marriage is not going to heal. It's not going to happen because it can be kind of blaming of the other person. Well, she doesn't listen as well. And that's why she, you know, it just can get into stuff like that. And there needs to be way more safety and accountability for a long time to create enough stability to then work on the relationship. That was a long answer to your question. I hope that was clear.
Well, it was very clear. In my experience, I did go to 3 semesters of a graduate program for marriage and family counseling because I did think that at one point that's what I wanted to do. And I did study this specifically. And so from what I know, it's a very different path to recovery for each member of the marriage, the betrayed and the betrayer. And so Can you go through maybe one at a time, the person who's been betrayed and then the person who has committed the betrayal, what the most important things for each of them to remember as they're going through this slow healing process?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And like you said, there are 3 recoveries that happen when there's major betrayals going on. There's the partner that was unfaithful. There was the betrayed. And then there's this couple recovery that really depends on those first 2 going well. And so for the betrayed, the first thing that the betrayed need to do is a lot of it is just trauma care, like just physical self-care. If you think of like a car accident, the first thing you do is you don't sit around and like try and figure out exactly how fast the other car was going and what it all meant. You know, you're not trying to diagnose anything. The focus is, do you need a blanket? Are you comfortable? Let's take care of your injuries. Let's help you not do too much. Let's just kind of deal with the physical repercussions of this accident. And emotional betrayal is no different. Our bodies can't tell the difference between emotional and physical trauma. It all is physical. And it's really important to get into a safe place, have deep self-care, reaching out to others, letting other people help you, be there for you, not doing this in isolation, allowing people in. You know, and it doesn't have to be a lot of people. It could be 1 or 2, but just somebody that can help you understand what you need as far as just physical care. And then that then leads into some boundaries. And boundaries are one of the hardest things, but it's one of the fastest ways to create emotional stability is to start putting up limits. So for example, like a really obvious kind of clear-cut example would be if there was domestic violence. It would be dangerous and impossible for the betrayed to heal if, let's say, the violent spouse was allowed to stay in the home after there had been an incident. They wouldn't be able to sleep at night. They would wonder, they'd be walking on eggshells all the time. And so the boundary is the quickest way to get to safety, which would mean, let's say that it was the husband that was physically abusive. He leaves the home or she goes to a shelter, and then there's a safe distance there, and then she can start breathing and relaxing and let her body calm down. And those boundaries can happen with anything. They can happen with sexual boundaries or emotional boundaries. Like, I don't want to talk about this, or I'm going to only talk about this in therapy. So the faster the betrayed can get into a mindset of what do I need to feel safe and establishing that and allowing themselves to have that, the faster that they're going to start to heal. And believe it or not, it actually accelerates the healing for the relationship too, because it stops a lot of that bleeding instead of blaming themselves or just not having boundaries and allowing the things to continue. So when there's a massive betrayal, the betrayed person, their responsibility is personal healing, which then includes setting up a perimeter and some boundaries so that they can protect it. And that's like, you know, that's enough work there for several weeks, months to stabilize things. for the unfaithful partner, the biggest thing for them is to reach out for support, open up as well, talk about it, be accountable, and basically have some honesty around exactly what's been going on. And they also need boundaries as well in terms of committing to what they won't do, what they will do. But their boundaries are going to be more about limits on their own behavior, if you will, and then providing and honoring safe conditions for the other person. If they're in a relationship that they've damaged, one of their first tasks is to basically do whatever it takes to help their partner feel safe and secure. So if they're actively denying and blaming and fighting and trying to keep things the same, then they're not going to heal, and there's certainly going to be an agitation for their partner. So I like, there's a lot about 12-step process that we, you know, that we adopt and use in our own programs here that I love, which is, you know, those first three steps. You know, I have a problem, right? Admitting you have a problem, admitting that this is bigger than you, asking other people for help, both professionally, spiritually, emotionally, reaching out, having some openness about it, getting rid of some of that initial shame and distorted thinking. All of that stuff makes a huge difference early on, instead of just trying to muscle through it by yourself. And then that also can show the betrayed partner that you're doing your own work, that you're taking responsibility and you want something to be different, instead of just waiting to see what they think you should do, or even worse, blaming them for everything going wrong. It takes a lot of humility and honesty to admit, yeah, I did that. I did that damage. And what do you need right now to feel safe, and offer them that? And that really calms and settles things down. That would be initial sort of work that you would do, but you've got to settle down the whole scene, because it's so traumatic for the marriage and for the individual who's been betrayed that emotions run high, and people oftentimes will make decisions that take a long time to clean up. So it's better to reach out, get support, and get stabilized as quickly as possible.
Well, let's move to what kind of your specialty is. You have kind of a boot camp, which is based around rebuilding trust after a betrayal like this. Is there a way to decide kind of quickly whether the trauma or betrayal is too serious and the damage can't be repaired? And is that often the case? Or is there, maybe there's a range, I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good question. And I mean, again, if most marriages that experience infidelity end up making it, then I would say that it's absolutely worth working on it no matter what. I've seen couples heal from domestic violence. I've seen couples heal from stuff that, you know, even I was wondering, like, are they going to make it? Like, this is pretty bad. Humans are pretty resilient. Our spirits are pretty strong. We are wired for connection. And we'll even, unfortunately, we'll even bond with people that aren't safe and put up with a lot of stuff that we shouldn't. But if you've got two people that are willing to work on it, you've got two people that are willing to do their individual parts to both heal and be safe and have good boundaries and then take accountability and work on it. In my experience, those marriages can make it. And I think we should give it every effort, and especially when there's children. I don't recommend people work on it if, again, there's just active ongoing affairs, abuse, addiction, or abandonment, meaning that the one person who's creating the injuries is unwilling, defiant, and you know, just totally unaccountable, then no, I would never encourage anybody to stay in that situation. That would be so destructive to their dignity as a human being, possibly even their physical safety. And so in those cases, no. Those aren't the people that generally come in for counseling or show up for these kinds of things. Usually it's people that have some sense of ownership and recognition that something bad happened and they want to get help.
Yeah. So talk about your Bootcamp Academy and how it can help a couple rebuild trust.
Yeah. So I created this bootcamp, the Trust Building Bootcamp. I've had this idea for several years because I work so much with broken trust. I actually wanted to create a bootcamp for the person who broke the trust. This bootcamp is actually not specifically for the injured partner, even though the idea is that it will hopefully benefit them. But I really wanted to create a structure and an environment, a program to help the person who betrayed trust have some guidance and some support so that they know what to do. Because a lot of the times, the way they respond or don't respond just makes or breaks the relationship. And oftentimes, it's the person that's been injured who's the most motivated to heal the relationship because they hurt the worst. And the other person who broke the trust oftentimes doesn't even know that they have a problem, or they don't think it's that big of a deal. So part of why I created this was to sort of help elevate the level of awareness and give them things to think about and work on, and specific steps on how to create conditions where trust can be rebuilt, and to help hang in there for the long term. I mean, it's a 12-week program, so 3 months. And I recognize that that's just a drop in the bucket for how long trust really takes to build. But these are lessons that, even though it's 12 weeks, 1 week at a time, you could definitely make this a 12-month program and spread this thing out. And so it's definitely not expected that people fix it in 3 months, but it's the information comes out and people people work on these assignments. And the idea is to give them very active things to be working on and thinking about. And I just think of it as people spending hours and hours and hours with me, listening and hearing and thinking about and understanding the impact they're having on their partner so that they can stay in deep accountability and compassion for the effect they've had on them. And then give them things to not only repair the damage they've done, but also just to become a trustworthy person in general. And so even if their partner can't stay with them or there's just no way it can work out, they at least can still be a healthy, trustworthy person in the co-parenting relationship or with their kids or with perhaps their other family members or a future spouse. That work has to be done regardless of the outcome of the marriage. And that's what I wanted to create. I hope the Trust Building Academy as a, you know, as a platform, I have plans to add, you know, courses for the betrayed and for courses to help with other specific scenarios, maybe a deeper dive into affair recovery or other things like that. But this particular course is for both men and women who have betrayed trust in their relationship. It's not gender specific, and it's, you know, it's definitely a lot of resources and information and help and support.
So what does the ongoing support and the rebuilding process look like? So you go through the boot camp, you get some condensed, just 3 months worth of work on that. And then what happened?
Well, while you're going through the course, part of when you sign up, you get a year's access to a twice monthly webinar with me live, where you can ask me questions, submit questions, and I'll talk through and answer questions twice a month. Think of it as like office hours where people can come and really custom fit this information to their own situation. And so I jump on a call every 2 weeks, and that goes on for a year. So you have a year's access, free access to that. It's just part of the program. And then if you want to subscribe for $15 a month after that year is up, you can stay on and keep listening to those calls and keep getting that support. But yeah, there's built-in support there. I recognize that a course is just some core information, but the actual application is going to take a long time and you want to have that ongoing support.
Yeah, well, $15 a month, that's the cheapest therapy I've ever heard of in my whole life. My parents are both therapists, so I know what they charge. So are there any other resources you offer or suggest for couples going through similar situations, betrayals of trust?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely finding a therapist. I mean, my course was not obviously intended to replace therapy, but I wanted to be able to offer good information that people can learn on their own and do it in a self-paced way. But I do think that when you're working with major betrayal, you've got to sit down with somebody who can help you slow these conversations down. So finding a therapist, again, my bias is emotionally focused therapy, what I'm trained in. It's what I've spent, you know, the last decade plus training and working with. And I have a lot of confidence in that model. And so finding someone who's either been trained in that or has experience in it is huge. And I think that the person, if you're the person who's listening to this, who's betrayed trust, I think any effort you make to pick up a book, to attend a seminar, to learn more information about how to repair trust and rebuild whatever injury, refix whatever injury you created, all those efforts are, I don't believe, go unnoticed by your partner. It shows a willingness to do whatever it takes for as long as it takes to get this right. And my experience is that most people give up too soon. They get defensive and ashamed and discouraged and feel upset that things aren't getting fixed faster. So it's really important to stay really patient and just keep trying everything you can. But as far as specific resources, there's a lot of great books and resources on all these different topics around affairs and things like that. And if you want, Monica, I'm happy to give you a little readings list if that would be helpful. We can put it in the show notes of some of my favorites. But as far as trust building specifically, that's why I created this. I didn't know if there was anything specifically like this out there. And so I've just created this to give people a guided path. And I'm always writing columns and articles and resources on these different topics. And so you can certainly follow me on social media. And I'm always posting links to different things because this is an area that I spend a lot of time in.
Yeah, well, this is such an important work. And it applies really, I think, to more marriages than we could even hope to understand. So why don't you just tell us the name of your course, where we can find it. And I understand that my listeners can get 20% off the Trust Building Bootcamp by using the code BRIDER20. So tell us where we can find you, follow you, get your course, and then I'll ask you the last question that I ask all of my guests.
Okay. Yeah. So if you want to find out more information on the course, just go to my website, trustbuildingacademy.com, and you can learn more about the course there. I have social media links on there as well. And of course, I have a contact form if you have specific questions about course, if you think it might be a good fit for you. And yeah, when you go to checkout, if you enter the code BRIGHTER20, then I'll give you 20% off the cost of the boot camp. And that also includes that free year of webinars, which are just office hours where you can drop in and ask questions and get support as you go along the journey there. So that's probably the best place to find me is trustbuildingacademy.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And my final question question for you is, if you had the undivided attention of every married couple in the entire world, what is the most important thing you could teach them about building an unshakable trust?
I love that. When you told me you were going to ask that question, and I sat there and closed my eyes and thought, what in the world would that look like if I had the undivided attention of every couple in the world? Holy cow.
For this moment, you do.
That's a great question. Well, this is what I would say is, and I'm going to go back to Sue Johnson's research on adult attachment. She has this acronym, ARE, Accessible, Responsive, and Engaged. And I would say, if you want to build unshakable trust in your relationship, you have to be accessible to your partner. They have to be able to know where you are, to know what you're feeling, to see what's going on with you, to have that level of transparency, and that they know they can get to you, that you're not hard to find or connect with. And the responsive part is, when they need something, you're either anticipating it or you're right there when they need it, that there's this call and response going on back and forth, and that your partner knows that you have their back and that you're going to respond and not leave them with the silent treatment or avoidance or overwhelm them with anger. So being accessible, being responsive to them, and then the engagement is this sense of them knowing that they mean the world to you and that you'll be there forever, that deep reassurance that no matter what happens, you're going to figure it out together, that you're engaged in this for the long term. That creates so much safety and so much trust. And when there's a major betrayal, all three of those get blown out of the water. All three of those get injured so deeply, which is why the trust building process takes so much time to reestablish that sense of, are you there for me? Do you care how I feel? Can I get to you forever? Will you always be here? Those questions all get brought up. And there's a lot of doubt in all three of those areas. And so that would be my answer, Monica.
I love it. It's a fantastic answer. And I love this interview and I'm excited to get it out. And thank you so much for your time and for the work that you're doing in the world. Because I know I tried it for just a little bit. I thought I was going to do counseling. And then I thought, you know what? I would not like this and I would not be good at it. So I'm grateful that you are.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, y'all. That topic was heavy, but I think it went really well. And I love how optimistic Jeff was about the success rate of those who have been challenged with betrayals. I think if you listen to last week's episode with Nate Bagley about building a strong foundation of friendship, paired with a lot of the things that Jeff talked about in this episode, you can really set yourself up for success when you build your marriage relationship on a strong foundation of friendship and build that unshakable trust. Last week's love language challenge was so much fun. I got so much positive feedback from it that I decided to make it an evergreen. So you can sign up for it again or for the first time and experiment with the 5 love languages. I guide you through it. Each day is a new love language. And then at the end, we take inventory of how everything went. So even if you think you know your spouse's love language, it's still so much fun to go through the love language challenge. I will link to all of Jeff's resources as well as the love language challenge in the show notes for you. Make sure you tune in next week for my interview with my good friend Jamie Andelin. This was an interview that we recorded. We were interviewing each other, and of course, it's one of my favorite topics, intimacy. So make sure you tune in next week for my interview with Jamie Andelin. And until next week, have courage, be kind, and stay on the brighter side.